Well, cool. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah.
And thanks for flying down from Washington. This is the best time to be in Washington, I think, like July, August.
It's so hot.
It's hot?
It's disgustingly hot up there.
But it's beautiful, right? It's not rainy?
I mean, it's okay. I love the rain, though, is the thing. Right. One of the reasons why we love where we live is because it is so rainy. It's just absolutely constant from, like, I want to say November through even April. We get it through April, but
blissful cloudy rain
it's
nonstop.
Beautiful. It's it's amazing.
And you move from sunny San Diego.
Mwah. I love it.
The best.
Yeah, and I was born and raised in San Diego, so I, you know, grew up with heat and dry and beige, various colors of beige.
Yeah.
And now we live somewhere that's green and
the grass is legitimately greener on the other side.
It really is. It absolutely is. But right now it's so hot. It's our summers have been getting like progressively hotter.
Mm-hmm.
And last year it was pretty hot. And then this year it's more frequently like in the 90s.
Unreasonable.
It absolutely is unreasonable. It's untenable. It's unsustainable. I hate it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're coming up on third and fourth quarter. Hopefully it'll cool down for you.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah. But you flew down for your first in-person onboarding today.
I know.
That was really cool. Shout out to MCP for taking a chance on us.
It was great. It was great. Everybody there was fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So can you talk through, like, you were at a small mid-sized agency in San Diego, Snap and Associates, for how long?
I want to say 7 years.
Okay.
I feel like that's right.
Yeah.
7 going on 8 maybe.
Okay.
Around there.
Got it. And then you moved over to us.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had your 1 year yet?
Yeah. At the end of May.
Okay.
It was 1 year. So
super cool.
A couple months past now.
Amazing. So this is your first onboarding you've done because we kind of transitioned stuff away from Chris Stain over to the account.
Yeah.
Managers.
First one in person. I've done a lot via Teams.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's via Teams. It is also very extensive. It's great. You get to have a wonderful conversation with the client. But I think in person, it was new. It was very cool to actually be sitting in the room with them. I mean, I've definitely had onboardings where I've had an entire group of people on the other side of the screen. So they're all in a boardroom looking at me up on the TV. But I think it's a lot easier to facilitate an easier conversation. You can actually see who's talking to you you're in the room with them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I want to talk about like your experience over at Snap compared to here, not in a way to like, hey, this is a better company culture, but from a way from like the client's perspective, like if a new client came on at Snap, like what was the experience for that new client? Was there an onboarding? What did that onboarding look like? And
No, I think at least from what I did, probably any kind of onboarding was more wrapped into the sales process of bringing them over to, hey, we should be your new agency. And then anything past that, it's hard to say yes or no, just because there wasn't really anything to onboard past we're going to be servicing your.
So it's just like, here's your insurance.
Yeah, exactly.
Here are the potential gaps in your coverage.
Yeah, right. It's like, you can absolutely provide, this is my review of your insurance program. This is where I think it's lacking. This is what I think we can do for you. But then beyond that, it really is just servicing. It's regular servicing, which is also incredibly valuable, but it's not something that, you know, you need to regularly interface with the client on, other than just checking in with them and making sure you are staying apprised of what's going on with their company.
Yeah, they're doing the acquisitions, updates.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
You do want to make sure you're getting all of those updates, but it's not something where you kind of have to check in on the health of their company as a whole. It's more, you're still focused in on the insurance
aspect.
It's
like a very vendor type relationship as opposed to like an integrated system.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, over, with the onboardings that we do now and the product that we're actually providing, the services that we provide with the, claims management and triage, all of that really creates this partnership between us and the client, where it isn't just we're providing a service, we're not just your broker, we are there to be a resource for you, we are there for you to come to us with any questions or anything you want to do with your company and see what we can do to help you grow. You know, not just cut costs with your insurance, but what else is there that we can do? And it's more of a dialogue. It's more of a back and forth.
Sure.
Than just a, you know, broker, agent, and client servicing relationship.
Sure. Which is probably like 95% of agencies out there doing it that
way,
right?
Yeah. I mean, I would think so. I think there are some agencies that try to provide some form of, I guess, risk management, but I think it does end up being more of a, we're going to review your insurance program. Sure. Again, it's focused on the insurance and not what back end things can we do to help you improve your processes
yep.
as a company that will help to influence your insurance costs.
Yep. That definitely. Makes sense. So that like will harken back to our conversation before we started this podcast is sales.
Which
like
one?
When you, yeah. About his how history's fake.
Right? Is that it?
No, more about like the idea of selling. So when you're reviewing someone's policy, like even today, right? Someone's got a like we'll use MCP. We're only doing their work comp for right now. Eventually we'll probably get the rest of it. But that process that you go through, like it's extensive. Like these are all legal contracts that have real world consequences if they're not structured properly.
Yeah.
Can you talk to me about like how often do you see, if you're going to do a policy review, how often do you see mistakes or things that they should have? Is it like every single one's going to have something on it?
I mean, not every single one is going to have something on it, but I would say that you do need an eye with some experience to take a look at your insurance program to whatever policy it is to make sure it's actually fitting to what your business is and what you do. I have seen and I have had, you know, policies come across my desk where I'm looking at it and I just go, this doesn't look right. And, you know, it's because they're being double charged for their operations because of the way they're structured. The insurance agency is looking at it like, well, we have these risks. And you understand that that is the way that they want to charge their premium. They want to base it on those risks. But then sometimes those risks tend to overlap with how they're measured sure. by the insurance company. And so you have to make sure that, okay, they're not overlapping in a way that's going to cost you more money. And then, you know, the other things to look at are, is it classified correctly? Is just the basic classification of it something that is fitting to what you do? Or is it a catch-all kind of thing that, again, you've been thrown into because further review was needed, but it wasn't done?
Sure.
You know, and those are kind of just the really easy basic ones where they can really stand out as, especially when you're onboarding a new client where you're trying to get to know them, you have a conversation with them on what exactly are you doing? What, you know, are you moving towards with your company? What kind of things are you looking out for in the future? Not just what are you doing now, but what do you plan to do?
So like a proper like insurance roadmap. To like
yeah, exactly. It's really evaluating not just what they need now, but what they're going to need in the future so that you can prepare to approach the appropriate markets. You can prepare to ask them the right questions because a lot of the time, you know, it's with any issue with business, you know, running a company, there's so many different things that are going to go into one particular part of running that company. And so if you can have someone that actually knows what questions to ask you, you don't have to figure out, okay, I need to give you all of this information. And then, hey, is this thing important? You know, it's that kind of thing of, hey, you need someone who can go, this would be important if it's a thing that you are doing. And is that something you're doing? And that's the kind of review you end up having to do is you need to
ask the right questions.
It sounds you need to like ask the right questions. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that definitely. Makes sense. It's a very circuitous way for me to say ask the right questions.
Sure. Yeah. So when you're seeing like obviously some overlap there, that's one thing. The other thing would be, are you seeing like people just not having a policy that they might need. Like,
oh,
the ones
definitely.
That we see all the time, like EPLI, cyber. Like,
oh, yeah.
No one. And I get like some clients that we have, like I've recommended that they don't get employment practice liability insurance.
I think it depends on the size of the company, largely, and what kind of issues they would have that would actually be covered by a policy like that. There are definitely considerations to take, you know, things to take into consideration on that front. But for the most part, there are definitely some policies where absolutely every California business in particular would benefit from them, such as employment practices or cyber liability. And, you know, property policies, I think those are the other ones where I don't see a lot of, say, contractors. They just kind of figure, oh, I don't need that for my tools or installation materials. Stuff. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, but you know what? We've got fires all over California all the time. We've got...
yeah, like real exposure.
There are exposures that have nothing to do with how you run your business. I think there are a lot of companies where they kind of figure, I take the appropriate measures to prevent these things from happening. I'm doing that risk mitigation myself.
But there's externalities that are outside of how you're doing your stuff.
Yeah, like, there's going to be other things that come in that you just, you cannot... You can't, yeah, you can't forecast that. You can't figure out, oh, this is going to happen next week.
Sure.
You need to, I mean, that's what insurance is there for. It's to provide that safety net for all of those potentialities.
Yeah.
And there are just way too many to keep track of on your onesie.
Yeah. So. It does seem like it's a risk tolerance. I would imagine mm-hmm. it's really tough for like an entrepreneur to look at their like insurance portfolio and be like, man, are we overinsured here? Like, do I really want to transfer all this risk over to the insurance company? Or am I willing to assume some of it?
Exactly.
And how often does that happen? Like, do you see hey, there's coverages in here you just don't need?
Definitely. I think there are some companies where, say, business income is one of those things that you really have to have a conversation on. Is this necessary for you?
Yep.
Because business income really only comes into play if there's like an actual
brick and mortar situation.
Yeah, brick and mortar, direct physical loss to where you are. And there are some companies that, hey, all they need is a computer. And so they can get set up somewhere else really quickly and they don't need that additional business income insurance to account for that because they're not going to have a loss there. If something happens to their office, they can just set up somewhere else really easily. They can set up somewhere else in 3 hours. Okay, so that's something that, you know, you would look at and say, hey, then that's great. You can assume that if you are willing, then you can assume that risk personally. But that's another reason why it's good to have an actual conversation on what is your business? What do you need to survive?
Yep.
And create an insurance program that is focused on the longevity of that business.
Okay.
And not just insuring against, you know, what might happen next week. But
so that what you're talking about requires an extensive amount of experience to learn and understand and how to navigate those conversations and actually like consult people on what they really do need and how to like architect that insurance policy around the company's specific exposures.
Yeah.
One of the problems that the insurance industry is having right now is like no one who is in their 20s is going into this industry. When I say no one, I'm obviously being hyperbolic, but like it's nobody wants to get an insurance. Mm-hmm. Like it's very, very rare. So how do you see that getting bridged? Because we are like, it's a very old industry, insurance is, and I don't like a lot of insurance agencies are getting scooped up, but every single like large brokerage out there are doing whatever they can to recruit like new young talent.
Yeah.
Do you see that ever changing? Because I don't see anybody like leaping up to jump in the space.
You know, I find it interesting that it isn't something that is pursued more, but I mean, my personal path into insurance was one where I was just, you know, in need of a job. And my sister actually got a job at the agency I worked for years before coming to Whiteboard. She got a job as data entry. Mm-hmm. And then
Devin.
No, this was my sister Meredith.
Okay.
And she got a job as data entry. And then what it turned out to be was definitely not data entry. It was things that are really just what our solutions team does for us, which is, you know, the certificates, the minor change requests, a lot of processing things. But it does take some analysis. It's not just, you know, punching information into the system and then having somebody else review it. You're not just data entry. So they asked her if she had knew anybody that could use a job. And so I came in and interviewed and got a job. And now it's my career. So, yeah. But that's the thing. It's one of those jobs where it's definitely insurance is not going anywhere. It is a secure industry as a whole of this is just something that everybody always needs. There's always going to be risk when you have a business. There's always going to be risk. There's always going to be risk when you're making something, when you're putting anything out there, there's going to be risk. And in order to address that risk, address those exposures, you need that coverage in order to make sure your business actually lasts and you can survive, you know, different things that may come up.
Sure.
But I remember I have a CIC designation, and it involves taking 5 in-depth courses.
Those are extensive.
It was a pain in the butt. but I'm happy to have it. And I do think it sincerely benefited my knowledge of insurance. It definitely expanded it. I look forward to taking the next class. I don't have to take the tests anymore.
Yeah.
But I do look forward to taking the next class because I feel like every time I do take something, I definitely learn something that helps me to counsel my clients better. But in one of the beginning, I think maybe the first or second course I took, the lecturer asked everybody, so who in here actually pursued insurance as a career? Like when you were in high school, you thought, I'm going to be an insurance agent. Yeah. And nobody.
No one.
Because how people get into insurance really does tend to be, you know, someone who offers you, hey, I have an opening here. Yeah. We need someone to do this. Do you think, you know, because they know you and they know that you can handle this position, or you're looking for a job and insurance agent or data entry comes up and you go, yeah, I could do that. Yeah. And then it evolves into an actual career. So
that's so funny. I feel like everybody I talk to, it's the same thing. It's like no one, everybody falls
into insurance. Nobody actually pursues it. I mean, and it's
Jimmy Williams on our team.
You know what? Yeah, he did actually. I was just going to say he did actually pursue it because I think he went to school for it.
Brady did too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is more to do with, I think, the development of school programs focused on that more recently, because now you can choose that as this is something I can focus on. An actual
discipline. Right. How does that, I guess, like for us, like we try really hard to create a good culture here, but we're remote, and that creates a whole host of challenges when you talk about culture. Mm-hmm. Like we don't get to be around each other. And when you are, it's like just for, I mean, we see what, like 4 times a year, something like probably. That. And so it's not a ton. And so like, I guess, and that's how most businesses are going too, especially ones that can be behind computers. Like
I think it's work, great.
It's way better.
I love it.
It's way, way better.
I mean, no shade to all of you. Yeah. I love you guys too, but I love my remote work.
Yeah, I think everybody does. Yeah. And I think having the flexibility to do that would be like the ideal situation. Can I go into the office for a day or two and see the people I'm working with?
Exactly. But
there's costs associated with that because you have to house a whole office for being used 2 days a week.
Yeah.
And that gets complicated. What do you think, I guess, like for us, like we could do to like get more folks like inspired to like jump in the insurance industry and not fall into it?
Oh gosh. I think people don't understand what it actually is.
Yeah.
Of it's puzzling.
Okay.
At least for me, one of the things that I really enjoy is solving that puzzle of someone's insurance program, what they need. there's always something coming up that needs analysis, like actual, I'm going to dig in, I'm going to do some research, I'm going to figure this problem out and what this person needs.
That takes a particular personality to enjoy solving puzzles.
Exactly. I think that probably is part of it, is it's a very, and one of the reasons why some people may fall into it and then may fall out of it because they may go, I'm not into this.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cause there are there's pretty much two routes you can go in insurance. You can be on the sales side, which is a bunch of double guns, Texan people. And then, like puzzle solvers.
Yeah.
You know, and providing that. But like both routes are like, you can make a lot of money in this industry. It's got very, very good. Like you said earlier, like it's not going away.
Yeah. It's not going away. And it can actually be fulfilling. Yeah. You can be an insurance agent and love it.
Yeah.
I think though that also does have to do with company culture.
Okay.
Just because at least for me personally, I know that I feel a lot more impassioned about what I'm doing on a day to day. I feel, more comfortable really counseling my clients, in the day to day than I did before. I feel like.
How does culture like fit in that? Do you feel like empowered, like you're allowed to do that and you weren't allowed to do that before?
I think there's a lot more reciprocal trust in, there's a lot more transparency and respect that supports that kind of feeling of, if you're working at a place where you feel like you might have someone looking over your shoulder at everything you're doing, then you may not feel comfortable to take the time to really research something and dig into something to figure a problem out for a client. You may stick to the tried and true methods and, outsource it to other people who might have more experience, but how do you gain that experience and how do you figure it out yourself don't figure it out? There's also just so much involved in insurance that is just, it takes from so many different disciplines. You do have to have a little bit of that sales. You have to have a little bit of that legal mind too, because you're pretty often I'm reviewing contracts.
Nonstop. For,
insurance contracts and looking into, okay, this wording looks wonky. You need to talk to somebody about this. It's very, while I can't give them, this is the wording you need to change it to because I'm not your attorney, I can tell you this is not okay. because it is so often these things are, they're difficult to understand. Insurance contracts themselves, the policies are contracts themselves.
Intentionally.
They can be, sometimes there is wording where I will stare at it and I will just go, what does this even mean? This doesn't, what are you talking about here? Like, I just don't, it can be ridiculous sometimes, which is why we're here, because
there's a bunch of attorneys who wrote all this language
and they were also like fighting each other at the same time. And yes. Sometimes there are portions of policies where you'll read it and it feels like somebody was writing something and then they highlighted three sentences, cut it out, and then they didn't notice that, okay, that sentence does not work with this next sentence at all. Like, it just, it's hard to puzzle out or it references, oh, you have to go back here. It's contracts work. And so if you're not into that puzzling, then I can see why it can be a difficult thing to throw yourself into. But I think it can be absolutely rewarding when you do solve that puzzle.
Yeah.
You put that last piece into place and you say, here is what you need. And this is going to work for you.
That's really cool.
And it's
great. I think most people, like most jobs for the most part, especially if you want to be paid reasonably well, requires you to solve a puzzle.
Oh yeah.
That's all it is.
It's any just, kind of puzzle. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's
part of the issue.
Yeah, it is problem solving. I think that's part of the issue with younger folks is there's like a learning curve, and the learning curve is so steep that there's a tremendous amount of insecurity that comes with not knowing and just being a kind of a fish out of water and be like, I don't know anything right now. And to get to the place where someone who's been doing this for 5, 6, 10 years to get there requires a tremendous lift. And so that would be the question, is like, how, like, if you were going to talk to like a 21, 22 year old who's like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. Like, mm-hmm. what would be the things that you'd be like, all right, well, this, if you have this type of personality, if you feel like you could like kind of bite the bullet for 5 years, like, why would this be a good career?
You know, I think there's a couple things to that. Is, you know, the first being there are so many careers out there or jobs out there where someone might be going into school with the idea that, hey, I'm going to study this. And then, you know, they get out and they're looking for a job and everybody wants someone with 5 years experience. And how can you get that if nobody's going to hire yeah. you? You know, insurance is one of those rare jobs where you can start it from zero and you just learn. The entirety of it is learning, and you're learning every day, even when you're 7 years in, 8 years in. There's still things that come across my desk that I have no idea. And I go, I'm going to have to look into that for you. And then I do the research and I figure it out and I get back to the client with what they need. But it does take some work. I mean, I think that is also what can make it a more rewarding job, is it's something where you're not going to find yourself just
being stagnant.
Exactly. Like, I've made it to the top. Same place.
Yeah.
You're not going to be stuck somewhere where, you know, okay, well, this is where I am and this is where I'm going to be. I mean, and I think that also does depend on the agency you're with, on the product you're offering, because I mean, just personally, I was an accounts manager previously, and yeah, I totally had that puzzling aspect of it, but there were certain things where I was just kind of going, well, I don't think I'm going to be able to get to where I want to be. I'm not going to be able to do the things I want to do where I'm at.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Annette called me up and said, we have a position here, would you be interested? I went, you know what? Yeah, let me take a look at what Whiteboard's doing. And I thought it was super cool. As I've said to you before, it satisfied the data gremlin in me that I get.
That's such a good term, data gremlin.
It's an accurate term is what it is, because, yeah, I think the whole thing is so data driven and I am into that. So, you know, it's one of those things that it sounds super pretentious to say it is also, you know, kind of artistic. You have to have some artistic sensibilities to
let
do
it
the
fly,
job.
Dude, yeah.
But you do have to, it's not just a cut and dry, this is the way it is, you know, this is what you need, this is what you don't need sort of thing. You really do have to get into the company with the client. You have to dig in and figure out what's going to work for you, what is not going to work for you, or what would work for you, but down the line, what's something that I think could be helpful, but you know what, you're right, you don't need it right now. It's a very individualized, puzzling experience.
I love that. I'm signing up. That's really cool. I think the idea of like, you need 3 to 5 years experience before you do this entry level job. Like, there's a ton of jobs out there like that. And I, for the life of me, I don't understand that. It's like mm-hmm. a common meme that's been out there for the past like 10 years.
Well, and it's also something where you don't need a degree. You don't need that piece of paper. I mean, I don't have a bachelor's.
Me neither.
It's not necessary. And there's so many jobs out there where that may be on the job description, but it is entirely unnecessary for the position that they're advertising for. But, you know, I feel like it's one of those things where you can get all of your training, and honestly, you should get all of your training, from the,
on
from,
job.
yeah, from working.
And you can be productive. That's what's cool. It's like the 0 to 1 years, like you're still productive. Like you're still assisting in a very vital role.
Oh,
in
absolutely. The it's all so vital. I mean, from the beginning, from that, you know, like I said, our solutions team, from our solutions team up through the very top, every single role is vital. There are certain things that I would not be able to do in my position without being able to trust that the people that are working on the processing stuff I send them can get that job done and can notify me when something looks a little off.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very, and that's something else that comes into play too, is you know, with company culture and with the people you're working with, is you do have to have that, you know, it is much nicer to have that mutual trust between everybody of, you know what you're doing, you know how to get it done, and I know what I'm doing, and we can talk about what we both need to get done for this client. But at the end of the day, I don't have to watch over what you're doing. You don't have to watch over what I'm doing. It's going to get done.
I love it. So. Mutual trust. Okay, that's a great place to end. Thank you, Kate. I really appreciate the time.
You're welcome. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, this was nice.
All right, adios.